Four, and I'm Natalie Peters. And if you'll just say your name, Mr. Schaefer.
John W. Schaefer.
Okay.
Born in Bel Air, 1920, April the 30th, on Bond Street.
Okay.
My grandfather had the second garage in Harford County. And when he passed away, my father took over the business and ran it. And then I went to work there. And when Dad retired in 1970, I ran it till 72, when Plaza Ford offered me a manager's job. So I went to work for Plaza Ford and worked with Plaza Ford to 82 to retire.
Now, what year did you start working at the garage and how old were you then?
Started working at the garage when I was 10 years old, 1930, during the Depression. I had to open the garage up in the morning and go to work after school to help bring in some money for the table. And I continued to work at the garage until I went into service in 1941. And when I got out of the service, they asked me to take a defense plant job, and I worked at Glen L. Martin's from 43 to 45. Then I came back and worked at the garage until I closed the garage up and went to work for Plaza Ford.
What were your tasks, your responsibilities at the garage?
General repairing.
Of automobiles and that sort of
and
thing.
And trucks.
Uh-huh.
We did all the gas and electric company repair work during those days. From 1948 till closing, we did all the big repair work for Bulmer Gas and Electric Company. And of course, we had NASCAR beer trucks and Country beer trucks and CP Grove fuel oil trucks. Of course, I went to school in Fairfax, Virginia two or three times on carburation and ignition. And when I was at Plaza Ford, they sent me to the school every time a new car would come out, be up to date with the new products.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to school continuously. I graduated from Bel Air High School in 1937.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about your baseball career. Now, when did that fit in?
Well, my last year of high school, they would not let me play because I was too small.
Uh-huh.
When I graduated, I weighed 85 pounds and was 5 foot tall. In the yearbook, under my name, it has good things come in small packages.
That's nice.
So, I went right straight to the Susquehanna League the day I got out of school and got 4 hits the first day. And needless to say, I continued to play until I retired in 1950, 51, somewhere along in there. And I played for Perryville, Bel Air, Glen L. Martin, and Hickory and Aberdeen. And was semi-pro, and we all got paid some each game. And when I played at Hickory, I got $20 a game. And Dick Hall went with the Orioles. He was getting $150 a game.
Uh-huh. What year was that?
That would have been in...
That you were getting $20 a game.
That would have been in about 1949.
That was pretty good money in 1949.
Of course, you got a little extra if you got a winning hit, you know. You got extra, you didn't count that. But Susquehanna League was a great league. In 1949, there were 6 ball players went out to the big leagues. 3 pitchers, first baseman, catcher, and a shortstop. Dick Hall, Jim Brosnan, Nelson King were the pitchers. Roger McArdle from Rising Sun was the catcher. Harry the Horse Anderson went to the Phillies for first base. And Penis Lowry, I forget which team he went, but he was an infielder.
And these are men that you played ball with?
With or against. I played with and against Cal Ripken Sr.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I was not a home run hitter. I was more or less a spray hitter. And I think my entire career I only hit about 5 home runs. But Cal was pitching one day, and I usually had the habit of taking the first pitch. And I told him on the bench, I said, now I know Cal's going to lay the first one in because he knows I've been taken. I'm going to swing first. And lucky enough, I hit it for a home run.
Huh.
He said, it's time to hang his pitching glove up when I can hit a home run.
That's great. Against Cal Ripken
Senior.
That's great.
He was quite a catcher, but he really knew the baseball game. I enjoyed. We had good ball players. I mean good. It was hard-fought games. And I don't remember any of us ever having a sore arm or a charley horse or a pulled groin muscle.
Mm-hmm.
We were in better shape, I think, than these ball players are nowadays. And we worked hard during the week. We had to make practice twice a week in the afternoon, Tuesdays and Thursdays.
And that was in addition to a full-time job?
Yes.
And so how many years total were you with the ball club?
Well, I played baseball about 20 years.
About 20 years.
My last year, I won the batting championship, 464.
That's great. That's terrific. And so you followed the careers, I imagine, of these men that went on to the big
league. Oh, yes. And, of course, I played soccer, and I played basketball for the town team. And played softball for Crow's Cleaners, which we won the championship about 4 years in a row.
So you worked all of this in with your job and the full-time schedule?
That's
and
exactly
the...
right. I went to work 7 in the morning and got through 5:30. And then at nighttime, if we had the tow truck, and if we were called out at nighttime, we had to go out at night with the tow truck. That was extra spending money on that. I had to take care of that.
That was over and above. And
I got married in 1945. We had two boys. We lost one in Vietnam.
Oh.
And my other boy is 42, and he lives down on the 155 going to Churchville.
Still lives local. Tell me about when you were in the armed services. Now that was, you joined up when?
I was drafted the day war was declared, December the 8th, 1941. And I left here. I was leader on the bus going to 5th Regiment Army in Baltimore. There were 6 of us left here to go to 5th Regiment Army. We got there and took a physical. We got on the train going to Petersburg, Camp Lee, Virginia. And I was leader on that. And the war was declared that day, the lieutenant on the train was reading the articles of war, which would scare you not even to raise a finger. So it was quite an experience when we got to Camp Lee, Virginia. The next morning, we went down, there was places to sign up where you wanted to go when you were, while you were there. And I signed up to stay right where I was, and the other one's in the office.
You were back in training? You signed up for where you wanted to go?
Oh, where I wanted to go. I signed up to stay at Camp Lee, Virginia. And the other two boys from Belair, Bob Smith, who's that next to the American Legion, he signed up to stay there too, and so did Kenny Sheridan. The next day when we went down, Bob Smith was sent to North Carolina, Fort Bragg, and Kenny Sheridan went to the West Coast, and I stayed there. I told him I was going to get home for Christmas, and I did get home for Christmas. But after I came out of the boot camp, I went across to Camp Pickett in the medical battalion in the 39th Division. And when they came to Fort Meade, Maryland, I asked to see the adjutant. I told him I could do something better than carrying stretchers. That's what I was doing with the medics. And I went to see the, and it happened to be Major Bob Archer, which was a customer of theirs at the garage.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of funny, I have to walk up and salute him after he did all his work at the garage. And I told him, so he got me transferred to the quartermaster. And that was driving a truck, which was not much more interesting than carrying a stretcher. So I asked to go back to see him again, and he said that they're having two new groups being formed. He said they're all going to go overseas, and he said there's a good chance for advancement in this new group. He said international business machines. So I went to see Colonel Steele. He made an appointment for me. Colonel Steele, he quizzed me for about an hour and a half while I wanted to volunteer to go overseas. Finally, I must have said the right words because he told me that the next day that I'd be taking an IQ test at 9 in the morning. So I went there and it was a 150 test, question test. Well, I went through it and answered what I could, had a time limit. Then I went back through and the ones that I weren't quite sure, I studied them again and I answered what I thought. Then I went back through the last time, was left for a time, and I guessed at something. Well, I got an awful good score. So there was 28 enlisted men, there was 21 from college, and the other 7 from other walks of life. And I had as high IQ from the test as any of them. So we went to Governor's Island, New York, where they formed our unit. It was called the 10th MRU, Machine Record Unit. There was 10 of them formed at the same time. And another unit, I forget the number of it, but it had the same troop records as we did. They went to England, we went to Africa. So if something should happen to us in Africa, they had the records in England or vice versa. And we were stationed with General Clark's headquarters in Africa, about 75 miles inland from Oran, a place called Temeshan. It was a French vineyard country. And it was hot in the daytimes and chilly at nights, and moisture was awful. We had to use cardboard to put on the carry-all seats in the morning because it was so damp. Then I got hurt and came back here and was discharged in November of 43.
You were wounded in action.
Mm-hmm. So, I went to, before I was discharged though, they asked me, I was reassigned to Fort Thomas, Kentucky, and Colonel Thompson came down to see me and asked me if I wouldn't go to Fort Sheridan, Illinois to help form a new unit, just like I was, and help with all the supplies they needed, and not some they didn't need. Mm-hmm. And I was there, and then I took sick again, and they asked me to take discharge. And I went to work for Glenn L. Martin Company then until August of 45.
And in that time you got married?
And July the 5th, I got married.
And your boys were born?
One a year later, and the other one was 6 years later. Mm-hmm. We moved out here. Rick, the son is still living, was 6 months old. He was born June the 3rd. Mm-hmm. And Gary was 21. Mm-hmm. But my grandson is named after Gary Ray the Schaefer. Mm-hmm. Gary was a great kid. He was a straight shooter. Didn't smoke, didn't drink. And this, my grandson, is a good namesake. He's just every bit as good, if not better.
Oh, that's great.
And he really loves my wife, and he talks to my wife in there every day.
That's great.
Which makes her very happy. My wife's been a good mother and a good wife.
That's wonderful.
She took all the boys to the ball games every time I played.
Every time? Uh-huh. That's great. Your own rooting section.
Yep.
Terrific. Tell me about Harford County. Now, you've been involved in politics to some degree. Can you give me sort of a feel for how Harford County's changed in the time that you've been involved in politics and lived here?
All right, let's start at the 1965 election, when I went on election.
Okay.
At that time, we had 19,000 registered voters. And I was only on the election board about 6 months when the former president resigned, and I was appointed president of the election board, and I stayed on it until 1974 when I retired to run for office. And I was kept on it by 3 different governors. They reappointed me every time. And then I made president of the Maryland State Election Association. For 2 years. In fact, I was president of it when I retired to run for council in 1974. And just 3 weeks ago, they had the state seminar here in Harford County, which was 20 years later than when I had the first one at the invitation in at, at Edgewood. And I was invited to that, and they presented me with a pin. So I had given it, there's election board, you got to know the people in the county. The judges were, most of the people have been in the county for all their life, you know, and it's more or less a day when they saw people that they don't see every day. And it was good experience, and the election board people were great people. They run a good office, and they don't need a boss. They know what to do, and they've run a good office up here. Then in 1974, our council, I ran against Mrs. June Weeks. She was on the Republican side, very knowledgeable and very first-class lady. And she covered this whole county, but I didn't have time to cover the county with my work and all. But I had good following because of the garage, my sports, graduating from high school, and in the being a veteran. I've been very active in the Legion. In fact, come July, I'll be a member of our Legion out here 52 years. I've been active every year. And I won. Well, the second term was a lot easier than the third term. I was leading vote getter, and the fourth term I won plenty. But I guess 16 years was long enough, and they just by popular demand, they said it was time for change. But talking about the county, back in 74, there wasn't much doing in the county. But it was starting to get a little too big for the town, the county commissioners. And this county had not been comprehensively rezoned from 1957 until 1982, 25 years. Anybody in their right mind knows there's been a change in the character of the neighborhoods in that time. Mm-hmm. 1982 was also election year, which nobody wanted to do a comprehensive zoning in election year because it was very political. But it had to be done. We'd started it. We kept on until we got it done. There was quite a considerable change done because if you own a piece of property on this road, it's zoned R2, and I own a piece of property on the other side, I should have to be zoned same as you are because it was a change in the neighborhood. In 82, there was still nothing much going on. Then all of a sudden, it exploded everywhere, not only in this county, but any place you go in the United States, it was development. And we kept up with the building. We tried to direct it, most of it to the envelope where the water and sewer was. And we did some things to help the farmers. They could have a 2-acre lot for every 10 acres they had. And it seemed to be working pretty well. Of course, the more people you got in, the more problems it caused. More people were unhappy with this and unhappy with that. And you can do all you want to do, but you can't make all the people happy all the time. And you had to do what you thought was the best for the most in the county. And sometimes, and all decisions have two sides, a yes and a no. And when your no's get over 50%, you're going to go. And in the last election, the sentiment was in the Congress, they couldn't come up with a budget at that time, and everybody was saying, let's oust them all. I happened to be one of them. But I loved the job. I did a lot for people. A lot of things around the county now has gotten done because I was part of it. Mr. Freeman was a good executive when we left office. We had cut indebtedness through Mr. Freeman and our council. The indebtedness, every person in here from $280 to $140. We had money there for the new elementary school at North Bend and the middle school at Falston, plus a surplus.
Tell me about what the community was like, the change that you've seen since you were a child growing up here and now. What's the feel of the community like?
When I was growing up here, all these farms around here that are developed now were all cornfields. My father used to have two trucks, and we used to haul cans from American Can and Continental Can Company up here to W. Robinson Company, George L. Smith, the Wilkinsons, and the Rigdons. They all had can houses. And as soon as school was out, we used to go to Baltimore, down on Bank Street, Gold Street, and we'd haul the Polish families up here that stayed and worked all summer. Then in fall, we took them back.
And, these were migrant workers?
Yes.
That you brought up in your truck?
They lived in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
They lived up here during the... They had little places where they lived up here.
Where were they?
Well, one of them was up here at Hickory River, Diversified Signs. Now, that was W. Robinson. And one down Wooderville, you can't find it anymore because it's been torn down and gone. And George L. Smith had one on Connolly Road. It's gone. Mm-hmm. Wilkins is gone. The Rigdons are gone. So all the places that work in now is here and gone now.
And what year was this about that you were bringing these workers in?
Well, we started bringing them up here in 1939, 1940, 1941.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you about then again?
1940, I was 20 years old.
20, okay. So you were driving one of the trucks and your father drove
driving
the other one?
Part-time when I was at the garage in case somebody didn't show up to drive when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
36. And, all these were cornfields.
Mm-hmm.
And each one has developed. The town of Blair had a sewer system that needed to be changed. In that time, they formed the Metropolitan Commission to run the sewer. The town of Blair was the first customer. And that's when they had the development envelope. Of course, Warden Bosley was one of the largest developers at the time. He bought up all the farms down Route 29, 24 now. And they all hooked up. He still has some hookups, I think, at the old rate, which they took him to court, and then the court ruled in his favor, and if they didn't honor it, the county could have been fined several hundred thousand dollars. So that's what started all the sewer going down Route 24, down to Route 40. Yes, that's the end of it.
So tell me about, how about your school and so forth? Your schooling you told me a little bit about, but how has that changed, or how did you see it changing as it went through the years?
Well, first, the Blair High School got overcrowded because most of the development was around here, you know. And we had Boston and C. Milton Wright and John Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, when I was on the council, I think Blair had around 800 graduates. Of course, we got about 400 now, just before. And it's the population is just going, I think it got 90-some thousand registered voters now. So that shows you against the 19,000 to 90-some, and of course, everybody's not registered. There's a lot of people that won't register because they don't want to be drafted for jury duty. I know one lady that her name comes off the book soon as election's over, and she'll get registered right before election, but then it'll come off again because she does not want to serve. And that lady used to live right there, she's deceased now, that she went to register, and they asked her her date of birth. She said, "I'm over 21. They said, "We've got to have your date of birth before we can register you." She said, "Well, then I'm over 21. If you won't take that, then I'm not going to register." So her voter registration card had on it, over 21.
That's great.
Never did have a date.
That's great.
So, but the communities have grown, and for years it seemed like they were still pretty close-knit, and then the more people move in, the more problems you had, and you and I see different from eye to eye. You know, there were a lot of domestic problems between some people, just like I was called at Christmas Eve to get a dog out of the impound. They were allowed to, after kept them over 3 days, they would put them to sleep or get somebody to take them over, you know. And so I got both of them to down, and I went down with them. I got both of them to be there, and I told them both not to call me on a dog anymore, because I would not come back after. Both of them were just fighting and using the dog as an excuse. Mm-hmm. It's like mowing grass. One place up Forest Hill wanted to get grass mowed, and they couldn't get it mowed. So some snakes come out of the grass, and the guy passed a bill, which they had to swear out a warrant, so it took the domestic part out of it. They ironed it out themselves most of the time. Of course, they've changed that since then and have the county do it and build somewhere. So those are the changes that's seen, you know. And we started out meeting in where the sheriff's office is now, was seated about 50 or 60 spectators. When I went along the council in 74, every subdivision in my district, bar none, had not been assessed for the water and sewer that they had gotten. Lower Acres, for example. James Julian did the work there from Delaware, and he was our customer at the garage. He'd finished up doing that work in 1970, and we closed out his account in December 1970. That never came before us until 1976. And we were called all kind of names when we assessed them. But they knew they had to pay the assessment. The ones I felt sorry for, though, was the original ones that lived there two or three years and moved on. Then somebody else bought their home, and still the assessment hadn't been paid, so they got stuck with the assessment all the way. The ones that were there, two or three, got free ride. But we had to move some of those hearings to Blair High School because the crowds were so large that we had no place to handle them. But we assessed everybody, and I went back. I didn't. That was my first term. I thought I'd never go back, but I went in with a larger vote that time than I did before. So, just doing what was right paid off. I don't have to look away from anybody. I don't have to try to think of another lie to make up for one I said. If I made a mistake, it was because I thought I was doing the right thing. It was honest. And, I enjoyed people. I enjoyed people at the garage. We had a lot of good customers. The automobiles were leaving for us. And
tell me about some of those customers.
Well, Dr. Pickett was one of them. He's deceased now. He was one of the head people at Aberdeen Proving Grounds testing products that went on automobiles, brakes. And all. He was very specific. Carburation and brakes was two things he really went after, and I did all the work on his car, and when he brought it in, he said, here it is, you do what's supposed to be done to it. Then we had people came from Media, Pennsylvania to have their work done. They were friends of his. And when I used to buy my first cars, I serviced some of the cars that were traded in. I'd buy the trade-in because I knew the car. In fact, I was 40 years old before I ever bought a new car.
And what's the name of your garage?
Bel Air Garage.
And your father's name was?
D.J. Schaefer.
And what was your grandfather's name?
John Weicker. My middle name's Weicker's family name. Mm-hmm. John C. Weicker was his name.
And he was your mother's father.
Yes.
Is that right? Uh-huh. And then your father inherited the business from him.
From him, my grandfather.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And was your mother ever active in the business or what?
Oh, yeah. She went and got parts and all and answered the phone and kept book. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It had to be a partnership. I had two brothers that worked there, Funky and Eddie. Eddie went to work for the government. And Funky, he went to work for different garages. He had a heart attack and had to do, and the truck work was a little too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I had, Donald Hopkins, Cliff Caudill, T.D. Caudill, Charlie Harkins, Bob Harkins, all got good jobs. Donald Hopkins is service manager at Henry Ford. T.D. Caudill was service manager at Auto Village.
These are all men that worked with you when they started out with you.
Coming out of school.
Uh-huh.
Charlie Harkins went with GenStar, those feed camels. Bob Harkins went with some big equipment.
So the family aspect of the business was important to you?
Right.
To keep up. Tell me something about that. What was it like having a family business in this area at that time?
It was hard work.
Yeah.
Long hours. Short pay.
And sometimes did you have to go without if the books couldn't cover you?
No, we made our pay. Sometimes it was awful hard making payments on the parts you used, and we had good credit, which carried us along to the. And when you did the work for Ballmer Gas and Electric Company, you carried them a whole thing for 10 days of the next month. They were good pay that was on them time, but you had a hunt. Some of those things would get expensive. And when that gas truck came to delivery, you had to write a check for it. But, yeah, there was tough times. And there was close calls at times, but we always seemed to manage to come through at the end of the year.
What was the depression like for you all?
It was tough. I got some legends in there from back in the 30s when oil was 15 cents a quart, gasoline was $6, 6 gallons for a dollar, labor was 50 cents an hour, and it used to have the old type pumps where you pump the gas up in the top, and how many gallons you wanted, 5 or 10 at most you could get. And then you pull the thing and let it run out. That's the way the tanks used to be. And the alcohol that was used before permanent antifreeze came around came in.
Well, it's nice to have nice neighbors.
Oh, they're fine.
That's terrific.
They moved in that, and they're just, we ate with them. They're first class.
That's true. So you were talking about the depression and having to carry people with credit?
Oh, yes. The one thing about my father, he only went through 4 grades in Catholic school. But he had his nice, good apprenticeship and could add as good as anybody in high school. And he took checks from total strangers, and all the time we were in business, he had one check advanced, and it was local. But he took some away as far as New York or California, and they all cleared. He was good businessman. And he was well liked too, because he was on the town commissioners for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very much oriented in the sports and the town, the well-being. And he was a good church goer, like we are. So, people's changed though, because people demand so much more now than they did back then.
Mm-hmm.
Some people did a lot more themselves now than they do now. They want everything done for them now.
Like what do you mean?
Oh, well, like if this lot was next door, growing up in weeds. And no problem. They usually got something put together and mowed it. Let them say it. Now, if it's done. They called up and wanted it done. So, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Why do you suppose the, where's the change? Is it in people or is it in the community? Or
in people who moved in.
Mm-hmm. Why do you suppose that is?
I don't know what it was like where they lived before, so I can't answer that.
I see.
Uh-huh. I think it's a change in coming, you know, and a lot of people moved in condos, so they don't, they have no maintenance to, mm-hmm. per se. Mm-hmm. But it's, they're sure welcome and they pay their way. So, I know the county's in a lot more debt now than it was when we left office, mm-hmm. but I guess that's the way for to grow.
Mm-hmm. So, can you remember back some of the early things? I know the Monpah Railroad and things
yeah.
like that. Can you tell me something about the early days that you remember in Harford County?
Oh, sure. Monpah Railroad went through here, and down at Falston used to be a station where they could store a couple rail cars. And when the cannon season was on at George L. Smith, we had to take canned goods from there over to the railroad track and store it on a car, and they only had 2 days to do it or they charged the merge storage. So you had to get it done so they didn't have to pay any haulage. Here, like with Southern States, used to be the station here in Bel Air, and they had a gondola came in one day loaded with steel. We were moving that steel that day. It was 120 degrees down in that. I mean, just melting. And it made 2 trips a day, picked up milk along the way. But it was slow, which is why it was called Ma and Pa.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it served a purpose in those days. Some of the right of way, you still see it some places. You know, up the rocks, you can see where it went across. It used to be able to see where the bridge used to go across. Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about the early days of Haverty Grace with the lighthouse, or?
Not too much about Haverty Grace.
What was your sense of distance? I mean, I can sort of figure it. We're out here in Bel Air. Your sense of distance to Haverty Grace, was that a long distance?
No, it's only 15 miles, 17 mm-hmm. miles, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you should be able to go to Haverty Grace in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Ball game. You can't go 30 minutes anymore. And of course, we used to go there and fish in the Susquehanna, or if you drifted live eels by Perryville, Port Deposit, not Port Deposit either, Perryville,
mm-hmm.
from the veterans, and catch a big rockfish nighttime. And,
can't do that anymore.
Well, little pencil eels about 12, 14 inches long, you drift them out of there. We had an outboard motor, and my buddy and I, he was a trainer for E.K. Bryson horses. He and I went over and rented a boat from Penn Beach and hooked our outboard out. We was out there trolling for drifting that eel for rockfish, and finally he snagged one. We finally got in. It was about 36 inches long. They gave him, it was pulling me and the outboard around. So we got it in the boat and unhooked it. He let his line go out, and that fish made it movement like he was going to jump overboard. He straddled that horse, that rockfish, just like a horse, and getting ready to hit him with the oar. I said, "Don't you do that, Freddy." I said, "You missed it. Go through the bottom of this boat." But we brought the big rockfish home. We didn't catch another one that night. But that was a good experience with D and I out there together.
And you won't find it.
I've enjoyed my life. I've had sorrows and happiness. I'm very fortunate that I still have one son, a great grandson. I got great in-laws on the other side. I've got a good life.
So what comes to mind when you say sorrows and happiness? I mean, I can imagine, but tell me about it.
Well, we lost our son in Vietnam. It was a big blow.
Mm-hmm.
And
what year was that?
67.
Mm-hmm.
67. My wife and her sister and my son had gone to Hawaii 2 weeks before that to R&R. He was in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, just 2 weeks to the day when we got the notice that he'd been killed. And what made it so bad, they notified us of the happening, but his body didn't arrive here for 7 days after that. If everything was just up normal, he wasn't sure that it was him, you know, a thing. And now all that agony, and my wife really went to pieces. She had still hasn't gotten over it entirely, but she was uptight all the way. And every time she'd say something, I'd have to swallow my tongue, because if I showed a tear, she'd go to pieces. So I had to keep from crying just to keep her to lighten the load some.
Was your son drafted, or did he enlist?
It was drafted. He went to work for Chrysler Corporation at Newark, Delaware. And he went to University of Maryland first, and he went the first year. And that's all he went. He didn't like it for some reason. He was getting better grades there than he was in high school. And he went to work for Chrysler Corporation. And they were taking an examination for a plant engineer. And there was, I don't know how many, it was several that took it, and he came out on top. And he was getting ready to go to college. They were paying, he was going to pay his way to go to college to be the plant engineer for him. Had he started to college, which was only 2 weeks from that date, he'd have missed going, but before he got to college, they drafted him. That was it. My son, Rick, he's 6 years younger. He never was a baby. I didn't think that Gary could do. He could tie his own shoes when he was 2 years old. He just grew up too fast.
How was it different for your boys growing up here than it was for you growing up here with your brothers?
Well, it wasn't. Most of the time, we did things around the house, fields playing. Weren't ball diamonds then. Where Blair High School is now was a big dairy farm. Where I was born, right here on Bond Street, with that black office building. Mm-hmm. Still got the same address, 212 South Bond Street. Mm-hmm. And the garage was over where Esso is now. So the house is torn down, the garage is torn down. And that's my wife, Jenny, right there.
Yeah, the front door.
So, Compass Service Company used to be right across the street from there. Mm-hmm. And Bill P. Plumbing used to be on the other side of where we lived. And there was a restaurant next to the garage, and of course, the Esso station. Now, the diner is still there. Came here in the 1930s. I remember when they put the sewer up with one back in the 30s. And we had outhouses up till then, in the 30s. Whatever prohibition ended, that's the year they put the sewer up, because the guys that were working in the ditches and all, when lunchtime came, they went and had a beer in the restaurant. I think Mr. Gatch put that, Corman Gatch put that pipe on back in those days, in the 30s.
Do you remember any early holidays? Any special memories of celebrating early holidays?
No, we only got 6 holidays at the garage.
Mm-hmm. And what were they?
Christmas, New Year's, 4th of July, Labor Day, and War Day. Mm-hmm. That's all.
What did you all do for Christmas?
Mostly family oriented. Mm-hmm. That mother had everybody in home, and then New Year's Day, she had a table seat 26. She had dad's relatives and our. And if we had a friend brought home, Mom always had an extra potato or something. My mother was always with the children. And we could bring anybody home we wanted to. She always had something to eat. I know we used to go to the movies on Monday night, because we got 10 cents allowance a week. And the police stop up, called Candy Kitchen, that's open out of South Pier, Mrs. Pano's. get a pack of chewing gum for a nickel and go see the Wild West on Monday night with the eyes and ears of the news and a cereal for 5 cents. We sit down front. Couldn't wait till Monday night so we'd go see a movie. Didn't have television then. Dad had one of the first ones in Bel Air, I think, in 1946, I think. Mm-hmm. He had a big pipe stuck out the window with a lever on it. He could turn the antenna to bring in the reception the best way.
Mm-hmm.
So Mom used to take us ice skating or sleigh riding.
Where'd you ice skate?
The different ponds run down there where Clyde Grove's plumbing is now. There used to be a pond behind that. Used to be a junkyard there. Used to be a pond there, and then over here at Larry Denton and Kelly's farm, we used to sleigh ride up there, go down across the water banks and all. And we had an old 32 Plymouth that the man used to work with W. E. Rogers Company gave it to us when he got rid of it because he couldn't get anything for it. All of us kids got our driver's license driving that one. And we used it to pull sleds and everything in the wintertime. So that was the big family car.
Mm-hmm. How long did you have it?
Well, we had 10, 12 years. His daddy had his own Buick. He always got Buicks. And,
mm-hmm.
But all of us children drove that Plymouth. And we used it a lot of things at the garage too, building his parts. And mm-hmm. It always was run.
Mm-hmm.
It had a rag type universal joint you had to replace ever so often because if you get jumping with it, it tear it out. But we did so many of them, you could do it with your eyes closed.
So it was up to you all to keep it running, was that the thing?
And on Saturdays after we got to do the gas and electric company work, we had to deliver the cars or trucks back to Fountain Green. And Dad would take the pickup. And we used to hire about four or five extra mechanics on Saturday to help us get through. And they'd take the vehicles back to Fountain Green. We ran out of gas one time. Dad said, I don't know which one of you's gonna get it, but I'm not going any place. I'm gonna sit in this truck. Somebody's gonna go get gas. He said, I got a pump up there. You're too damn lazy to put it in it. You're gonna walk.
So who went and got it?
I didn't. I was the one supposed to put it in.
Did he know that?
He knew who it was. My dad was a man of few words. If he liked you, you were fine. If he didn't like you, better get away. Because he just... He couldn't tolerate anybody that didn't live up to the word. He just did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
And he told you so, too.
And you inherited that from him? And your boys, too?
Mm-hmm. Straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Dad always was good to old people, and I've been good to old people.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, when I was on the council, I enjoyed it. I loved people, and I was out at nights seeing what I could do to... I was a full-timer.
Mm-hmm.
In Plaza Ford, when I went to work for them, anytime I had to be off for an election responsibility, I could have off. And I worked at the auction, Bel Air Auto Auction, as the arbitrator there for 23 years. And they gave me every Thursday afternoon off. Still on me for it. I worked 5 days a week at Plaza Ford. First time in my life I ever had 2 days off in a row. And I got 2 weeks vacation, and the most I ever got was one. So they furnished me a new car. So it was altogether a different ballgame.
Yeah.
I had a lot of responsibilities there, though. Which I should have, if they'd wanted to hire me for that, I should have the responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good. Mr. Walls treated me just fine. Couldn't do any much.
Can you tell me any special events that have happened in Bel Air in your memory? Anything like celebrities coming through or... Nothing like that, you can't remember. Can't think of it.
Only one, and that was back when Mother played the piano and I had taken piano lessons too. Mom had all of us take piano lessons all three boys and two girls. And I lost one sister on prom night, automobile accident. So as of today, there's just the youngest living, and I'm the oldest. The other three have deceased. Madam Schumannheit was a well-known piano player.
Mm-hmm.
She was coming through and had car trouble, and she went over to the house, she and mother, and she played the piano for mother. And mother, I think the selection was Ben-Hur. I do remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's other...
All fix her car?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So you were fixing the car at the garage while she
was over
playing?
She was over Mom and chatting.
Uh-huh.
Had to get some parts for it. Took a while to get. Well, there's other people, you know. When I was on the council, I went up to Marilyn House, and Roy Rogers came up there. It was dedicated to one of his buildings. And I was telling him story about going to see him on Monday nights, you know.
Uh-huh.
He said he was making $75 a week back then. When I told him that story, he said, no wonder I didn't get any more than that. You didn't pay your fair share.
Yeah. Should I stop this? I'll go on. Uh-huh.
It's on now?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when we played ball, the ball fields were barnyard, and of course you know that the cattle are not sophisticated, nowhere to go. And I remember this one day when they're playing an all-star game out here at Del Haven, where the little shopping complex is now. Used to be a ball field out there, and a good buddy of mine was a good ball player then. I admired him, and the ball landed in one of those little pies, and the third baseman, which went to Syracuse to play in the International League the next year, Al Rubling, he was hollering, Reinhardt, can't you pick that up, throw it here right away. Made Mr. Reinhardt mad. He picked it up and threw a strike and flew all over Mr. Rubling. So that was one I had never forgotten. I played baseball down at Glen Al Martin's one day, and a Texas Ligger was hit, and I was backpedaling. I played shortstop. Oh, and I got it, and I was in the service. The Army pulled my wisdom teeth and gave me a partial plate. Well, when I howled, I got it, it jumped down, got crossways in my mouth. I thought I was going to strangle to death. I finally got the ball, and I threw it back in. And I reached in, got the teeth, and threw it over the fence. And that was them.
That was the last you wore those?
So I. See, most of my time, the stories were mostly ball games, at work, or in the service. I enjoyed the service, in fact. Had I not gotten hurt, I might have made a career of it. I like to work on the IBM machines. And I had charge of all the supplies and trucks for us. So it was a good job to keep you busy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's been good to me. Up to the last couple of years, I've had good health all the way through. But, when you get to be past 70, you start getting this and that and the other, but I'm still pretty good health, so I'm very happy.
You seem to be in very good health. Did you see any changes from the time that when you went off to the service and came back? Is there any change then?
Not too much. Everything was, because all the boys were in the service, you know, all the prime boys were in the service, and everybody else. Dad closed the garage up during the service. All three of us were in the service. But I sat to open it up in the morning and even for gas, Mom would do that. Other than that, the garage was closed, and when you come home, there wasn't too much to do. There wasn't too many places open, you know. And the weren't a lot of restaurants like there are. There weren't any fast food in 1910. One was out there at Del Haven called Rubens. He used to have Susie Q potatoes early. That was where they originated at his place. And when I was out there chasing fly balls when I was a kid watching the ball game, I got a quarter of a ball. I get about $2. I got enough to get something to eat. Then I kick a couple under the weeds someplace, so I get them, we play ball with them next week. So we had plenty of tar tap to tape to wrap the bats with when we broke them and put wire on. But all of us got spikes. We used to play the black team out behind our house at least once or twice a week, and we had good games out there. That's before we Oxford won high school.
This was the segregated league, right? The black.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Behind our house was the school for the black.
Mm-hmm. What school was that?
It's Central Consolidated.
Uh-huh.
And, it's still, the county still has it there. They use it for storage.
Mm-hmm.
And down they had a short, it's where the health department on that field there. Long right field and a short left field. You hit it over the play, we hit it in the road to Rabbit. So I learned how to hit the right field so I could keep on playing. And it just didn't. Blair Racetrack was open back then, and we'd open up 4 o'clock in the morning on weekdays and take off from 12 to 4 in the afternoon, go to the track. Daddy was a advertisement person for the racetrack. He went all around Delaware and Virginia and Maryland giving out passes. And he had a box on the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
So we did our work before and after, not doing it.
What was that like? Tell me about the races a little bit.
Oh, they had good races. The stretch here at Blair Racetrack was longer than some of the mile track stretches. It was 5/8 of a mile instead of a half mile like some of them. It had big crowds. It was a good track. They decided to close it up and give the mile tracks more dates, you know. And I guess along on that was the way to go. But at the half mile level, it was the prime one at the time. BTR bought it down. They got to, that's where the racetrack is, where Mall, Harvard Mall is now. All that property back here with the post office and all those condos, that all belonged to them. By our farm association.
So are there any other specific changes from the times when you were a boy to the times now? And
sure, a couple service company moved down where they are now. Mm-hmm. The restaurant's gone, the garage is gone, the Hughes Plumbing's gone, mm-hmm. all those up on Main Street, Amoco Station's gone, the bank's up there now.
Mm-hmm.
The building's still standing there. It used to be a restaurant, so it burned out, and then they built that tire place up. The county owns it now. Paul McLean used to have a garage where the parking garage is now. Where the Red Fox restaurant is now on the front used to be Preston Stationery Store.
Mm-hmm.
Across the street used to be Clark's stationery store, and then he had a restaurant there in that corner. Down on Thomas Street, they had a pool room. Down across from the armory used to be a wine cellar, Tony Battistoe.
A wine cellar?
And the library started right there, and a little building went across the.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen this area through a lot of different changes.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think the future here is going to be like? What direction is it going?
Well, they've got to keep working hard to get more businesses. More businesses. Because the real property assessment is going to have to be capped. In fact, I had it capped at 6%, and they raised it to 10. It comes up again this year, and I'm going to have a haul filled, try to get it back down to 6. Because because it's just too, they just have to work around that cap. Florida had a law in this year where it'd be capped at 2.6 or the cost of living, whichever was the least. It didn't pass, but the paper I had written when I left said it was very popular and next year it would be introduced early and it probably will pass next year. They have a lot of seniors in Florida. This county has a lot of seniors, very much higher percentage.
A lot of lifetimers.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And a lot of people worked at Aberdeen Proving Grounds have retired here too and become seniors. They like it.
What is the biggest change you've seen other than the development in this area?
Traffic. That's not only here though, traffic everywhere. Traffic everywhere.
Now the early days, the traffic wasn't just cars, right? It was also buggies and...
Right. But as the time went on, when it seemed like when the outhouses went out and it got sore, the cars got better and they increased and the horses went down. My grandfather had his place in Palmer County there, right at Chopper Road. He owned that whole farm from Chopper Road up where McDonald's is down there, the Perry Hall. He used to have a stall in Blair Market, and he never owned an automobile. He took it in horseman's wagon. Mm-hmm. And he retired when he was 57 years old off of a truck farm where Bug's Dairy backed up against it. They'd gone bankrupt two or three times, but they had kept owning a lot of automobiles. So, just the way you managed your money.
And that was your father's father?
Mm-hmm. And his mother had herbs that she grew inside of her house, and she wrapped them for a nickel a bunch. And she got enough that she had enough to go to races once in a while on. That was her livelihood, mm-hmm. just to go to races once in a while.
The car races, or was that?
Horse races.
Horse races,
Pimlico. Nickel a bunch.
Do you remember your grandparents? Do you remember wrapping herbs with your grandmother or anything
yes,
like that?
Yes, I remember. I used to go down to the farm there and stay a week during the summer when I was little. And I'd go over to see her. She had one finger off because she was diabetic. She could really manipulate that thread and tie it so fast, you know. Underneath the back porch was shady. Underneath it had like a old Singer sewing machine where you had the twine on it, you know, if they kept pulling from that and wrapped it. And she could really spin those nickel bunches out in a hurry. And she did all the growing of the herbs and picking them and wrapping them.
What kind of herbs do you recall?
I can't remember. But I know it was different, a lot of different varieties. But she had a little patch on the side of the house. But it wasn't so little. I guess it was about 20 by 50 feet. Which is not too big, but it's big enough.
What else do you remember about the farm there?
They used to butcher at in the wintertime, and Uncle John, they used to butcher about six or seven hogs. He'd go in there and reach underneath and grab the far leg of a hog and turn him upside down and stab him with the other. And after he did the first one, all the rest of them get upset, but he took care of killing every one of them. Then he had a job of taking the intestines down to the branch, washing them out so he stuffed in the sausage.
Is that what you did?
I helped one time. That was enough for me. Then they made liver pudding, they made scrapple, and Dad used to butcher two hogs in the town of Blair. He raised them and butchered them, and he had a wooden barrel, and there was enough salt in it that an egg would float on top. Then they put the meat down in that brine to keep the meat, and some of the pork or the roast they'd hang up on the eaves of the roof where the animals couldn't get a hold of it, you know. Of course, they packed it with salt. And then they fried the sausage down in a jar and put grease in and turned it upside down. That's how they kept the sausage.
And two hogs would last you all through the year?
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about 1,000-pound hogs?
Yeah, good-sized hogs.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that which rendered at large.
What's involved in that?
Just cutting it up and staying with it to its own, rendered and then put it in pound cubes. Didn't like the smell of it. Well, it didn't have, it had a peculiar smell, just something I didn't like. So, yeah, we raised chickens at the house there, and Dad had a garden right there on Bond Street. So we raised everything we ate.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? You didn't shop at a local place?
Oh, Mom did, yeah.
Uh-huh. But most everything else you got there?
Yeah.
You made your own bread, your mother did?
And on weekends had clean chicken house. With a hoe. And about once a month you sprayed it with whitewash. Had to be done.
Uh-huh. And you all went out early and collected the eggs, or was that up to your mother?
Well, I got them once in a while, but not, most of mine was cleaning the chicken house. The other kids, some of the young ones, went and got the eggs.
I see.
Well, see, I was the oldest, and I got to do less things than all. Well, needless to say, in my earlier days, we did very little traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some Sunday, like they had a flood up in Charleston, West Virginia, and we drove up in a Model A Ford just to go up and look at the water, how it was rushing and gusting at places like that. We're going up to Conowingo Dam when it's been flooding and the water, wind's blowing and spraying the water across the dam. Those are the kind of things that that we did get a chance to go.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't go away on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you only have a week's vacation in a year, there's not many things to do. His mother, she took the pickup truck and us ball players when we were going around 12 to 14 years old, and she drove us around. If it hadn't been for Mom, I wouldn't have had any time off in the garage at all. So I did get a chance to go and play ball once in a while. Mom would take us, and she always treated us to a bottle of soft drink, and which was a nickel. My mom was great with the kids. He didn't have time to spend as much time as Mom.
What were your Sundays like? You started with church in the morning?
Mm-hmm. And, see if we can get a ball game sometime. And sometime we had to go back to the garage, somebody broke down or something, we had to go in and open up the Hollies. We had no Hollies, that was our big money makers then, because everybody else was closed and we were in the general repairing, we were open. That's when we had to be open. So we didn't have the Hollies off that the rest of the people did.
How did you meet your wife?
Well, she came here from Charleston, West Virginia. She came here in the youth movement during the war, and she went after school at Reisterstown. And she was hired by General Martin. And when my father closed the garage up during the service, he went to work for General Martin, and he was made a foreman of the noses for the PBM planes. And she went to work for my father. And she was living in Baltimore at the time, and Mom and Dad took a liking to her, and they used to invite her up for dinners, and Mom and Dad usually went out to dinner back then on a Saturday or a Sunday, and they took her a lot of places to dinner. And when I got out of the service, it was Thanksgiving 43, and Miss Vivian Thayer used to be the racing secretary of Larry Racetrack. She lived in Chicago with her mother and sister, and they asked me to come spend a couple of days with them before I came back, which I did. So I got home on Sunday after Thanksgiving. Mom was having a big dinner. When I walked in the house, Jenny was standing there in the kitchen doorway. I could tell you she had green shoes on and a nice-looking young lady. And I called them with trapping shoes. And Mom introduced me, and I said hi. And I went on out because I wanted to see my colleagues, my girls, and boyfriends, and all, you know. So actually, it was about a week before Christmas, when Grandma Martin was having a dance downtown, that I wanted to go to the dance, and all my friends, you know, made arrangements, gotten dates or something. So I called my wife up and I asked if she'd go with me, which she did. And I guess maybe 6 weeks before I had another date. And then maybe 5 weeks or so, first thing you know was once a week, and then first thing you know was a couple days a week. And I swore I wasn't going to get married until all of a sudden I'm up at the altar saying I do.
All because of the shoes.
But I'm certainly glad that I married her because I couldn't have picked a better person.
And how long have you been married now?
Since 45. Mm-hmm. Next year will be a big thing.
That's right.
50 years next year. She's been a good mother and a good wife. She's the one who got me straightened out and got put on right.
And how long did that take her?
About 40 years.
Well, good for her.
Not quite that, but I listened to her, but it was not every time, you know. But she was a guiding light for me to change some. I wasn't bad. I didn't do things bad, you know. Of course, Halloween, we were a little mischievous, then we didn't damage property. DVD played some good tricks on people.
Tell me about some of them.
Well, we take a gate fence post off and put it up on a barn roof so somebody had to take time to go get it down, you know. We put a wagon wheel, propped it up like it was going to roll over something, you know. They had to catch it. Things like that. Nothing that was disruptive to property, but broke property. We changed property, but did not break it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody seemed to have a good time.
That's what you and your friends went out and did on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Of course, it wasn't bad. They only had a couple deputies then. It wasn't many people around. To find you then, you know.
Uh-huh.
Of course, when you're not doing things, it's disastrous, was not so bad anyway.
Did you ever get caught?
Well, I got caught once, but he just told us and said that he shouldn't be doing that. That's all. Nothing.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it wasn't bad.
Did he make you go put it right?
Oh, yes. Which we did.
And what was that trick?
The wheel. He was popping it up so it'd roll. He knew what he was going to do. We put a buggy up on top of the barn roof one time. There's about eight of us boys put it up there. And they had to get help to get it down. But, you know, those things didn't hurt anything.
Right.
Like, not like they do now with razor blades in candy, and that's sickening. Poor little kids, they're afraid to go around anymore. We haven't had hardly any children here. We used to have really 4 or 5 pounds of candy. I think we had two children. They're local. They're just afraid to take the kids anymore. We used to pick up hitchhikers from our age. We won't pick up anybody anymore. Not even your friends. You don't know who your friends are anymore.
And what is that change from? Increase in population again?
Oh, it's changed everywhere. It's not just from here. It's changed from population, yeah. We used to have, you could see the hitchhikers on the road all the time. And if you were going, you'd stop and ask them. But, well, they just, devils in everybody now. You just don't take a chance. When I was in the hospital in Florida, I didn't want my wife to drive to Miami at nighttime, 30 miles from wherever you stay. So I said, I'm waiting, I'll get back home. I just don't respect people anymore like that. You pick and choose now.
In the early days when you used to pick up hitchhikers, were any of those people transient workers? You bring any of them home or meals and things like that?
We stopped maybe sometime at the restaurant and have a sandwich or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But
During the Depression and things.
Yes. And after the war, too.
Mm-hmm. Veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because I've been a member of the Legion. Every July to change years, I'll be a member there 52 years. Mm-hmm. Been active all the time.
Thank you. What has that been like? What have you seen in the change in the membership there?
Well, it was very large, then we went down, now we come back up. We're larger than we've ever been now. We're getting a lot of people who moved here from Palmer County and Palmer City that are living in condos and all, you know, and they frequent during the afternoon, but not at night time. They slip over and get a beer or two, and then they're gone. Bar does not do the business it used to do because everybody respects the new driving license and you can't afford to do it, which is good. But it's harder for the post to make any money anymore than it used to be. The clubs across the river, Cecil County, have slot machines. And so a lot of Harford Countyans go spend their money over there, and of course Harford County can't have it. We had a chance to, we used to meet under the Ardron Theater movies in the basement. So we got so large that we couldn't handle them, and we bought where we are now. It used to be a tea house there. We had a chance to buy that property for $21,000 or the property down there where Kmart and all that. That property there, we could have bought the same property there for $21,000. But that had no home on it, so there was no difference. That's why we bought out there. And the building we're in now is the veterans that came back, and the contractors, they built that building. There's nothing bigger, big barn when they got through with it. It's been a lot of money spent in it since, but that's who built it. They paid off the $21,000 and had $10,000 in banks and had slot machines. Moved in that new building, in 6 weeks they took slot machines away with no revenue. It's tough.
How have the men changed, the membership?
Well, everybody used to know everybody before. Now there's, if I go in there now, of course I know more than my wife, but I won't know two-thirds of them sometimes. We have very few young people. Most of us getting older. We have sons of the Legion that are doing pretty good now. They've picked up some of the programs. As long as they do the job and do the programs that they're supposed to do, the Legion, I'll participate. When they don't, I'll quit. They have Boys State, they have the Veterans of Perry Point, they have Girls State, they have scholarship program, children, youth. As long as they're doing those things.
Have these things been going on the whole 52 years that
you've
been there? Can you tell me something about those events?
Well, they used to have Legion baseball, but it's got so expensive. The insurance alone cost you $5,000-$6,000 to have it, you know. And you have to, I think it was 2,500 co-ed you had to draw from. You couldn't skip a school to pick your 2,500, you know. You couldn't bypass one. And if you got the 15 boys that you wanted, and he got out of school, the first thing you want to do is go to Ocean City, and maybe you lose one or two games right away because you didn't have the players. And that, to me, that was sickening. I never believed missing a ball game. But the uniforms, just one thing or another just got expensive. I was very much instigator in helping get the funds for the community college for the sports complex right there.
Did you ever coach any of these teams?
Oh yes, I was state director for Babe Ruth baseball for 13 to 15 year old boys. And I was on the national committee until I missed one meeting in November and they dropped me. I had to go to Newark, Delaware, if I'm wrong, New Jersey for the meeting. And I couldn't make it in one November. Dropped. I went to Lynchburg with the tournament. I went to River Stadium in Washington, D.C. with the tournament. And I went to Albany, at the college up there in New York with the team when I was director. Team Belair won 2 years in a row. Next year they dropped me. I had nothing to do with Blair Wind. It just happened that they were had two ball clubs. I enjoyed that. Of course, I was on the coach of the Legion team for a while. And the boys back then didn't have as many things to do. They didn't have automobiles like they have now. But as soon as you get 16, they got an automobile, and it's hard to pin them down unless they genuinely want to play ball. We present a sportsmanship award in honor of our son that we lost in Vietnam. He won the Babe Ruth Sportsmanship Award when he was playing baseball in school. So the coach and Al Seske asked us if we wouldn't perpetuate it as a Gary Schaefer Sportsmanship Award. And even though this was the 26th year we've done it.
That's terrific. So who have some of the boys that have won that? Do you remember the boys that won that?
Well, one of them is Phil Stewart, the big black boy around and mows lawns a lot.
Mm-hmm.
See him pushing the lawnmower around. He won one. This year the boy was Richard Barwick. I know two or three of them, but I can't remember the names now. You only see them that one time, you know, and sometimes you get a note and sometimes you don't. Phil Stewart came to see us quite often, and then he and Rick are my son are good buddies, you know. And the lady works up at the planning zone, Margaret, I forget her last name, her son got it on there. But it's been a good program. When I was called on to make a few remarks at graduation, I told them, there's three things that got me where I am today. Number one, when I worked hard. Number two, when I played hard. And number three, I respected the belongings of others. Told them, I said, if they follow those three principles, they will succeed.
That sounds like it. Before I let you go, Mr. Schaefer, I want to ask you, just give me two more things, if you would. What is the worst change you've seen in your time in Bel Air, and what is the best change you've seen?
Worst change, I would say, would be the traffic pattern. I guess the best change that I can see is that after all the controversy over the courthouse, we finally got the court in Newport Beach. Which took a lot of doing because it was a controversy between the county executive and the newspapers. But we finally got it done. And when Mr. Behringer was elected county executive, Mr. Hudgett was president of the council, they called me in. They said there's three things they want me to get done for. One was the Larry Addendum, taking over and updated the courthouse and parking. And that wasn't the parking garage at that time. It was where they're parking on the next to the Mary Risto building now.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be Poland's back then. I worked it out with the state for 15 years. The county tore the buildings down in the state, did all the improvements and did all the lighting and everything else. 15 years. So, the courthouse, some wanted it built on that parking lot, some wanted it built where it was. And I listened to both sides and I came to the conclusion if we would have moved and built the new courthouse on that property, we wouldn't have had the parking. The old courthouse would have deteriorated and gone down the tube. As it is now, the old courtroom up there is historically designed and stayed in its original state. It's used, and we got parking. They're running out of space now because they got so much of the caseload. The council, we took that spot over. I told Mr. Hardwick, I said, we're the ones that have to set the budget. And if we don't, and that's not needed now, I said, if we don't go in, somebody will be sitting in it. And we had no place to meet. So that's when we took it.
You worked hard to get that done.
We knew that they had to get out sometime. Mm-hmm. That was back in 79, so it lasted a good while.
And other than the work ethic, which I think is a really good one, about respecting people's property and so forth, is there anything that you would say to today's youth, the young members of the community?
Participate and be part of it. Participate and be part of it. Don't criticize, be a part of it.
Make it their own.
Then you can criticize.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a good place to end.